Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In the first hour of the show today, we'll be talking about life in one of the most important cities in our region. But as far as I can remember, we've really not talked very much on this program before about this city, and the place I'm talking about is St. Louis. At one time, St. Louis was the fourth largest city in the United States. It was a thriving metropolis and a very important place as far as the United States goes. However, in recent decades, the city, it would seem, has fallen on hard times. Since the 50s, there has been significant loss of population, and if you read about the city in the popular press of the kind, read a lot of stories that have to do with high crime rates, problem with the schools, problem with developments. And while even people who support the city would admit that, yes, in fact, by a lot of the standard measures, the city and the region has to be seen as in certainly a place where there's been a long period of stagnation, if not decline. These people also are real believers in their city and have argued that maybe indeed things have turned the corner. And while all these problems exist, there are certainly a lot of people who are working hard to revitalize and redevelop the city. So this morning, we'll try and talk a little bit about what's going on, what has been going on, and what is going on in the city of St. Louis. And we have with us two guests, and they are both faculty members of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Joining us this morning, both by telephone, Richard Rosenfeld. He is professor in the Department of Criminology and Criminal Justice and does work in the areas of crime statistics and crime control policy, among other things. He's the co-author of a book that's used a lot in college classes, where they study criminology. That book is in its fourth edition now. It's Crime and the American Dream. And he's also edited a book that really deals with a lot of the issues that we'll be talking about, I'm sure, this morning. And that's a book that came out last year, the title Hidden Assets, Connecting the Past to the Future of St. Louis. Also joining us is Professor Lana Stein. She's chair and professor of political science and also professor of public policy administration. She does, in her research, focus on urban policy and has written a number of books about the politics of the city of St. Louis. I'll just mention the most recent, which is titled St. Louis Politics, The Triumph of Tradition. That book came out in 2002. And they're, as I say, they're both joining us this morning by telephone. As we talk, of course, people who are listening are welcome to call with questions. All you have to do is pick up the telephone and dial the number. If you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So if it would be a long-distance call, you're listening over the air around Illinois, Indiana, anywhere the signal will travel, or you happen to be listening on the internet, those folks can use that toll-free line. That's 800-222-9455. And again, the local number for Champaign-Urbana listeners is 333-9455. Well, we'll say good morning to our guests. Professor Stein, hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And Professor Rosenfeld.
Morning.
Glad to have you both with us. Maybe I'll start, I'll just pick one of you. I'll start with Richard Rosenfeld and also then Professor Stein. I'm sure you can comment. We started thinking about this. I think the thing that started us off was a story that appeared not very long ago in the New York Times, talking about both the city's problems and also the feeling that a lot of people there in the city had that there had been improvement and there was still hope for revitalizing the city. And it listed things like, for example, the fact that last fall, an organization that published crime statistics said St. Louis was America's most dangerous city. And it talked about the problems with the schools and so forth. When people see something like this in the New York Times that confirms what I'm sure a lot of people already believe, that St. Louis is a place in decline. Do people in St. Louis, are they frustrated when they read stuff like that?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are. But people who have been living in St. Louis for some time are quite used to this, as you suggested. you know, St. Louis, in some sense, has been turning the corner for the last half century. I grew up in this city, and I remember in the early 1960s the extraordinary enthusiasm surrounding the building of the Arch and the then-new Busch Stadium downtown. And that's just one of perhaps a dozen examples I could give over the last, two to three decades of the city turning the corner. And, you know, that was back in the early 60s, some 40 years ago. So the city has been turning the corner for a long time, and it turns, and it's not quite made it around the bend. St. Louisans are used to that. I think a lot of people, I'd be interested in knowing what Lana's view is, I think a lot of people are just turned off to this moaning about the prospects of the city. And I think increasingly younger people in the area don't make the distinction that others make between the boundary of the central city and the metropolitan area. Mm-hmm. And if we talk about the metropolitan area of St. Louis, we're talking about an area that, while I think it's fair to say is not booming, is certainly not in decline.
Well, that gets at this question, and maybe at some point we can talk about the issues of population and how you count and where you count and where you draw your lines. But I'll just give Professor Stein the chance to, you know, comment on that whole this big question that I raised any way you like about perceptions of the city and how people in St. Louis feel about that.
Well, I think a lot of people in St. Louis are a little more optimistic, and it's not just because of, you know, a new stadium, because we have that too, but because neighborhoods are changing and turning around. There's a lot of new housing, home ownership throughout the city, black and white, and things look better. The neighborhood I live in, I've been here for 18 years. It's an integrated neighborhood. It's come a long ways. I live near Del Mar Boulevard, where the Loop is, and the Loop now extends into the city and is going to extend further. And there's more optimism about that. We're tired, I guess, of hearing all these national statistics which paint more gloom and doom than we who live here actually feel.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you then a question, because I had an opportunity to take a look at the book St. Louis Politics: Triumph of Tradition,
yeah.
In which you make the point that, interestingly enough, St. Louis is a place where there are machine politics, like, for example, Chicago, but unlike, for example, Chicago, it has a weak mayor form of government. So we have a machine, but you don't have this strong central
leadership.
Well,
we don't have a machine. We have machine-style politics.
Oh, okay.
But
so
it's a lot more factional,
right.
And it's not centralized power, which makes it difficult to do things.
Well, that's my point exactly, whether that the fact that it sounds as if within and rather than having one big central source of power, you have a lot of sources of power that no doubt are competing with one another. And does the fact that that's the political setup in St. Louis make doing development on a large scale, does that make that difficult?
It can be difficult, yes. You know, we have 28 wards, and each alderman basically has to okay what happens in his or her ward. And sometimes if developments are going to cross ward boundaries, et cetera, you may have some difficulty. But generally speaking, it's not as horrible as it might seem. You know, things go on,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Does that, Professor Rosenfeld, can you have any thoughts about that connection between local politics as they exist in St. Louis and the development issue?
Yeah, well, two thoughts, really. One is that, the city of St. Louis is decentralized, I think, with respect to the power needed to get major projects accomplished. I think that's putting it mildly, but the city of St. Louis in that respect reflects the area, the metropolitan area, which is extraordinarily fragmented politically. And that makes it difficult to move ahead projects of all kinds that require city and county and the municipalities in the surrounding counties move ahead those kinds of cooperative ventures. They do happen on occasion. They could happen much more were it not for the fragmentation. But the other thing I would add is that, quote, big development, in my view, and this is one of the themes that comes through in the book Hidden Assets, big development is not necessarily the way forward, or certainly the only way forward for St. Louis City and the St. Louis metropolitan area. My own view is it's the small pockets of development that spring up, have sprung up all around the area and continue to do so, that really provides a somewhat more promising future for the area. The Loop District is one that Lana's already mentioned, the South Grand commercial and entertainment area, the Soulard neighborhood. I mean, Lana and I could go on and on about the pockets of real strength, vitality, and progress that one sees around this area. So I would argue that big development is not the only way forward, and it can actually undermine some of the assets that make the area so attractive.
Yeah, Professor Stein, did you want to pick up on that?
Well, I just want to mention the Loft District. I tend to go downtown about, you know, once every few weeks. And the Loft District along Washington Avenue and the streets nearby, where you have a lot of old office buildings and warehouses being converted into loft living, is very phenomenal. And you have a lot more young people living downtown, pushing baby carriages and walking dogs. And it's really a major, major change in the area.
Yeah. I think one of the points that comes across in Hidden Assets is that if you're going to try to make some assessment of a city, you have to look broadly at different kinds of indicators. And I think, as you point out, Professor Rosenfeld, in the introductory essay that you wrote for the book, if you look at a lot of the standard measures, the things that I mentioned at the beginning, yeah, you would have to say St. Louis has some problems, but that it's important to look at different kinds of measures of development and health of the city. And when you do that, the argument of the book is that there actually are a lot of exciting things going on there that if you just stick with the standard stuff, you're not going to see. And I think that's an interesting idea, because it says that, you know, when we're trying to ask this question, looking at any individual city, asking how is it doing, you have to draw your boundaries really broad when you look at all of the things that you might consider to be good indicators of a city's health.
Right. And I was trying to, in that introductory essay, and also in talking with a number of people who ended up contributing to the book, I was trying to get a sense of what locals appreciate about this city. And by locals, I don't simply mean people born and raised here, but I also mean people who have been here for quite some time and decided to stay because of the values they see in this area. It's the housing stock. When visitors come to St. Louis, one of the first things they remark is, where did you get all this beautiful brick housing? And it's all over the area, throughout the city and throughout the metropolitan area, until you get well into the outskirts, and then one confronts a standard kind of sprawl-like development. The beautiful parks. Forest Park in St. Louis is larger than Central Park in New York, and arguably even more beautiful. The historic neighborhoods that Lana's mentioned, these emerging commercial and entertainment districts, the music in St. Louis, the blues music tradition in particular, the rivers, both in terms of the commercial activity associated with the rivers, but the potential for other kinds of riverfront development. We have a strong tradition in the skilled trades in St. Louis area, and those are occupations now that are subject to labor shortages, and the skilled trades tradition in St. Louis, I think, positions this area very well for certain kinds of development. And then there's the cost of living. We are, like Champaign-Urbana and other places, a Midwestern city with Midwestern cost of living, and that's obviously an attraction. So there's lots here we try to emphasize in the book based on what locals like that we think spell a somewhat more promising future than those so-called standard measures would suggest.
Yeah. Professor Stein, anything you'd like to add to that?
We have an excellent symphony orchestra. We have opera. We have art museum. We have all kinds of cultural attractions, and the people, generally speaking, are very friendly. It's very easy to get around in St. Louis. People are helpful. I don't know how you can quantify that, but it exists.
Let me introduce again our two guests, Lana Stein and Richard Rosenfeld. Lana Stein is chair, professor of political science, and also professor of public policy administration at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Her work focuses on urban policy and administration. She's written a number of books about politics in St. Louis. Also joining us is Richard Rosenfeld. He's professor in the Department of Criminology and Criminal Justice, also University of Missouri, St. Louis. He's written on crime control policy, other things, and also is the editor of a book that looks at some of the advantages, the potential advantages of the city of St. Louis. That book is Hidden Assets, Connecting the Past to the Future of St. Louis, published by University of Missouri Press. That book came out last year. And we're talking about the city of St. Louis. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We do have a caller here to bring into the conversation, and we will do that right now. Here we'll talk with somebody in Champaign on our line number one. Hello.
Yes, I want to deal with an aspect of quality of life for African Americans in St. Louis City. As I was growing up in the Deep South or the Mid-South, there was always a rumor that St. Louis, albeit a Midwestern city, had a lot of the attributes of Jim Crow, similar to what I grew up in the Mid-South. And then I had recently two instances of an associate at the University of Illinois who spoke very negative terms, I guess about 5 to 6 years ago, about the climate he faced as an African-American in St. Louis. And then I had two law students who went and started practicing law in St. Louis, and by the first week they were there, they had to go to the Human Relations Council to file a charge against the landlord for discriminating against them on the basis of their race. They were African-American. These two recent events, and this was about 2 years ago, lead me to conclude negative thoughts about St. Louis, coupled with the other negative indicia that appeared in that recent New York Times article. And, of course, I would imagine the problem with the St. Louis City schools predominantly affect African-Americans, as most inner-city public school problems do. Can you comment on quality of life in terms of for African-Americans in St. Louis City?
If I may,
yes.
St. Louis was de jure segregated. Okay, school systems were segregated. It wasn't as rigid a segregation as you would find in southern cities, but it did exist. You know, the idea that women could go to a department store and buy clothes, but if they were African American, they couldn't use the dressing rooms. Buses were not segregated, but schools definitely were, and restaurants were, and hotels, etc. So there is definitely a southern legacy along with the Midwestern industrial type city. Discrimination by race exists in every city that I know of in the United States. I don't think St. Louis is alone in that matter. However, I think that there are many African Americans here who feel that there is a quantifiable racism. We've had two black mayors. We now have a black president of the Board of Aldermen. We have one more official in county offices who's black. But it's not an easy subject. And knowing other cities as I do, particularly my hometown Detroit, I don't think there's anything palpably different.
Well, what about the problem that I would have if I were to come there with my family, and this is just hypothetical, knowing that the school system has been taken over by the state of Missouri?
It's supposed to be taken over in June. It hasn't formally been taken over
yet. Well, I would say, okay, it's supposed to be taken over in June, and we're going to start school, say, in winter, August or September. Would that be?
Well, that's certainly a problem. And many people who live in the city do not use the public school system. They use parochial schools, which they have for years and years, or private schools. The school system has been in trouble for a very long time. It had a very, very entrenched bureaucracy. It's been very resistant to change. It had trouble with basic things like ordering supplies and getting them to the schools, getting books, in April for classes that started in August. So there have been a lot of problems, and that no doubt is a factor for anybody who wants to live in the city.
Okay, now I would imagine, and I'm going out on a limb here, that going to the private schools or the parochial schools is a good alternative for a number of people, including middle class or upper middle class blacks, but I would suspect that the primary socioeconomic group of blacks in the city are probably at the lower socioeconomic order and are probably wedded to the public school system. Am I right?
Well, that's true, but we've also had desegregation that's been going on since 1982, in which now about 9,000 children go to schools in different school systems in the county.
Okay.
And they have that option.
All right. Well, thank you.
All right. Well, Professor Rosenfeld, do you want to weigh in on any of that?
Yeah, I think the caller points to an absolutely central problem that St. Louis faces. But St. Louis, as Lana suggested, isn't alone there. A few years ago, Bob Joyner wrote a piece for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and I think it was titled something like The African-American Brain Drain. And he was trying to identify aspects of the area that make it less hospitable than many other areas, at least the perception is this way, for middle-class and upwardly mobile African-Americans. And so he made the standard comparison between St. Louis and Atlanta, and based on, stringing together lots of anecdotes, told the story about how middle-class, upper-middle-class professional African-Americans, if they were born here, even educated here, leave afterwards, or if they have the opportunity to move here, don't, in favor of places like Washington, D.C. and Atlanta, which are ostensibly, more hospitable places for middle-class and upper-middle-class African-American to live in. This is one of those areas that I think, as Lana would put it, is hard to quantify, but I think the perception is clearly out there. And I frankly don't know what St. Louis can do other than deal with this issue head on and make sure that anybody interested in race and race relations in this area has multiple opportunities to discuss it and address it.
All right. Well, other questions are certainly welcome. We're at our midpoint here, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I'm sure that when you start talking about these things, you inevitably make comparisons between one city and another. And I think that also in Hidden Assets, there is the suggestion that if you're going to make comparisons, they ought to be fair comparisons.
Right.
So you shouldn't be comparing St. Louis to Chicago or Los Angeles or New York. You want to compare St. Louis to cities like Indianapolis or Cincinnati or Minneapolis.
Right.
And if you do that, then would you say that on a lot of the measures that we're talking about, things like cost of living, economic development, the health of the school system, mm-hmm. Race relations, whatever you want, how then does if we're saying let's make a fair comparison, how does St. Louis compare with other cities that are similar?
Yeah, on cost of living, we compare reasonably well, but when you're comparing Midwestern cities to other Midwestern cities, you're not comparing places to one another, with the important exception of Chicago and increasingly Minneapolis. You're not really comparing places to one another that have comparatively high cost of living. On the standard measures that I deal with my essay in the book, frankly, St. Louis, is roughly in the middle of those Midwestern cities. It doesn't really stand out. The areas in which it stands out, I think, have to do with the kind of historic assets of the city. The housing stock, certainly, the parks, the architecture, and the potential for development around the rivers, the skilled trades. Those are the areas that I think do distinguish St. Louis from, Indianapolis, Kansas City, all wonderful places to live, certainly. And we ought to, if those are our, quote, competitors for development and population, we ought to remember that we have historic assets that are somewhat distinctive, and we ought to develop in a way that reinforces and strengthens those assets and doesn't undermine them. The big development going on in St. Louis is the big development going on in every one of those other areas, and that's development at the outskirts that involves converting farmland to housing developments and commercial strips. That development, with respect to that development, St. Louis has no necessary advantage over Indianapolis, Cincinnati, Kansas City, Louisville, and so forth.
Yeah.
So if we're going to compete on those grounds, we're as likely to lose as to win.
Well, just real quick, a population question, because I mentioned, and one of the things that this article that we've talked about has mentioned, is the population decline since 1950.
Yeah.
At the same time, there also has been a growth in the areas around the city. If
right.
you take it, if you don't talk not just about the city, but the metropolitan area, has the population decline been that significant, or is it a case that, people are moving out of the inner cities, but they're also moving to the...
In the metropolitan area, it's more stagnant.
Uh-huh.
It hasn't fallen, but it hasn't increased greatly either.
Right.
And with the city itself, we've lost over half the population, okay, since 1950. However, people would argue that we have bottomed out. And it comes out, they put out these special censuses, which continue to show us losing population. But every time we have a real census, it comes out with more people than the special censuses did. So I only have faith in the ones every 10 years.
And St. Louis has been, I think, uniquely successful in challenging the special censuses and winning. The mayor has, I think now it's twice, Lana, maybe more,
twice
successfully challenged the low population estimates from the special censuses in favor of higher ones, and he's won in at least two instances.
Yes, he has. And but it's a continuing problem. It's like when they started to make the special estimate for this year, they went back to the figure that we had already challenged.
Right.
And so it's not an accurate system, the ones that they use, in the odd years, let's say. But I think you can tell that there are parts of the city that are still losing population, but there are parts that are gaining it. What often happens is you're gaining more in households, perhaps, than people, because you have a lot of one and two people settling in the Loft District and other parts of the city.
All right, let's talk with someone else. This is also someone listening in Champaign on line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
I wanted to make a couple of observations on visits I've made to St. Louis recently and then also ask a couple of questions.
Mm-hmm.
I was just in St. Louis this past January poking around. I stayed in the Lafayette Square area. Explored Soulard and Benton Park and looked around some different areas. One of the things that I have noticed, of course, is all of the Loft development going on and rehabs and so forth. One of my observations, though, is that there are still so many areas of the central city that are pockets of development but that are kind of disconnected points still in the urban in the urban landscape, for lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
And the other question I have is about Old North St. Louis and how things are going there as far as rehabs go and as far as the housing stock, what's left of it at least, in terms of development. And I'd be happy to hear any thoughts you have about either of these topics.
Well, when you say it's disconnected, sometimes rehab or new construction starts in a particular area and then spreads from that, and some areas are more advanced than others. Vis-a-vis Old North St. Louis, there is new housing construction going on there now, and they're still planning the 14th Street Mall, redoing it. But, it's a slow and it's an arduous process. Our federal funding for redevelopment has fallen considerably over the past 20 years, and so, things, it's more like inch by inch.
Right. I quite agree. Recall that it's a city that once housed 800,000 people. Fewer than half that number live in the city now. Even with a development boom, the likes of which St. Louis has never seen, we will continue to have a pattern of so-called disconnected development. That simply goes with the territory. This was once a much, much larger city. And the population of St. Louis may be increasing, but it's not likely to get back to 800,000 anytime soon. What we need to do is imagine different ways of developing those so-called interstitial areas, the areas between the pockets of development. That is green space that can be put to very good use, and other sorts of development, including new manufacturing. So I don't necessarily view that disconnected quality of the development as a negative. I think it's simply inevitable given the population size the city once had. And I think there are some possibilities for developing even in the areas that aren't currently subject to development.
Well, thank you for your comments.
All right, thanks for the call. Others are welcome. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. And we're a little bit past the midpoint here, so let me again introduce the guests. Richard Rosenfeld, he is professor in the Department of Criminology and Criminal Justice at the University of Missouri in St. Louis. Writes about crime statistics and crime control policy, among other things. Is the co-author of a frequently used text dealing with criminology, Crime in the American Dream, and now in its fourth edition. Also the editor of a book, Hidden Assets, Connecting the Past to the Future of St. Louis, published by the University of Missouri Press last year. Lana Stein, chair and professor of political science and also professor of public policy administration, also at University of Missouri St. Louis, done a lot of research on urban policy and administration and has authored a number of books about politics in St. Louis. Questions are welcome as we continue to talk about the city. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, we talked a couple of times about this article that a number of people seem actually to have read in addition to us in the New York Times, talking about the city and the issue of development. And I want to particularly get some thoughts from Professor Rosenfeld, but also, of course, Professor Stein, you can weigh in on it as well. And I want to have you talk about crime, since mm-hmm. this is your area, mm-hmm. and since it made a point of referring to this statistical analysis that was done by this organization that declared that City of St. Louis was the most dangerous city in the United States. Again, if you take a look at other metro areas that are comparable, is the crime problem in St. Louis really so much more serious than other places?
No. If you're comparing metropolitan areas, it certainly is not. St. Louis doesn't rank anywhere near the top of metropolitan areas in either serious property or violent crime. When you compare central cities, however, St. Louis does rank at the top or close to the top in many years. But those comparisons are, I think, ill-advised and inappropriate. And the reason is, comparing apples and oranges, when you compare a city of such as St. Louis with, say, a city like New York or even our close cousin down the river, Memphis. And here's why. The population of the central city of St. Louis comprises a very small fraction of the metropolitan area population. It's something like now 12%. Let's compare it with Memphis, where Memphis accounts for over 50% of its metropolitan area population. A crime rate is the number of crimes occurring in the city divided by the city population. In the case of Memphis, you've got a city that absorbed much of its metropolitan area in the early days when it could, has a much larger population base, and when you divide that through the number of crimes, you get a somewhat lower rate than is the case in St. Louis with a very constricted central city. You're dividing through with a much smaller population base. But note, to be in the numerator of that fraction, to be the victim of a crime, you don't have to live in the city. You can be anywhere in the area and just happen to have been in the city when the crime occurred. But to be in the denominator, what you're dividing through is simply the city population. So I think those comparisons are inappropriate. When you compare across metropolitan areas, St. Louis is not especially distinctive.
Mm. Well, I'm interested in what Professor Stein feels about this and also how it is that that people there in local government react to a kind of a dubious distinction of being named most dangerous city in America.
They don't like it.
Big surprise, huh?
Yeah. I've lived in the city for 18 years, and I've been victim of crime once. A window of my car was broken, and I don't consider that very substantial. I feel safe. I walk around even at night, and I don't think my friends particularly feel bothered you know, there are certain areas of the city where crime is more common. There are gangs, et cetera. Rick knows a lot more about it than I do. But just because, you know, the figures are, don't necessarily give you an idea of whether crime is likely in all areas of the city either.
Right. I'm sure that the city of St. Louis and the state of Missouri, I know, they put efforts into trying to get people to come and visit. With tourism, and certainly, you know, all cities do it. Chicago does it. The state of Illinois does it. Everybody's trying to get people to come into their state and spend some time and spend some money. Is there also a parallel kind of effort that's aimed at actually trying to get people to move there and settle there permanently?
Oh, yeah. There is. You know, lots of that effort is private, and some of it is somewhat more formally organized, sure. St. Louis has lots and lots of room for population growth in all areas of the metropolitan area. And when you try to attract people to visit or to live, obviously crime is, and the, you know, risk of becoming a crime victim is important to people. But I need to point out that if you're going to make a list of the things that increase your risk for crime, this city, or for that matter, the metropolitan area you live in, would be way, way down the list. The amount of time you spend outside the home during the evening would be much, much higher on the list of risk factors for becoming a crime victim. And even with respect to geography, it's the neighborhood you live in, as Lana was implying a little bit earlier, rather than the city you live in or the metropolitan area, that elevates risks somewhat. And all cities I'm familiar with have high-crime neighborhoods and low-crime neighborhoods, and St. Louis is no different.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure, though, that's when people read stories, if they read stories about crime being a big problem, or they read stories, and if they have a family, they read stories that say, well, the school system having a problem, then for those people who are going to try to persuade folks to come and live there, that's going to be a tough sell if what they read in most of the media is about the city is all bad news.
There's no question.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
I would just add one point. I've been studying public schools, public school reform for over a decade now, and there's no central city in the United States, large central city, that has a distinguished school system. They all have problems. Mm-hmm. Ours have gotten a lot more publicity of late.
We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus. We have someone else who wants to join in the conversation. Other folks are certainly welcome to call 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. Here the caller is in Champaign County, here where we are, line one.
Hello? Hi.
Yeah.
I'm coming at this from a Metro East side, but also wanting to know, I watched The White Flight from East St. Louis when I was a teenager and helped auction off people's belongings when they were fleeing the East St. Louis area. And I know that I kind of want to get at the idea of the alienation of the inner city. And that sounds formulaic, but you just started mentioning the schools, and I guess the schools, St. Louis school system is going to be taken over by a state-appointed entity. I apologize, I missed the first half of the show, so I don't know if you discussed this at any length, but it seems it bears repeating anyway. But between that and I believe there was a lot of problem in just having people vote in the inner city, two elections in a row at the presidential level. I don't know, you're probably watching it closer, but I'm just wondering how alienated people are in the inner city of St. Louis. It seems to me, Buckminster Fuller called East St. Louis the worst ghetto in the world some years ago. I don't think it's actually progressed much since then. And from a holistic point of view, the idea of the alienation amongst and the poverty and lack of any kind of vision for their lives in the midst of, you know, a wealthy nation. I don't know how you're going to respond to that. It's sort of, I should write a poem, I guess, instead.
Well, no, I would refer you to William Julius Wilson's book, When Work Disappears, because the problem of the inner city, there are a lot of problems, but the decline in jobs, and particularly the decline in jobs for less skilled people has been devastating. And that's happened in Chicago and St. Louis and Philadelphia and lots of other cities. It's a very severe problem. It's not being addressed.
Right. I would also add that the tragedy that has occurred in East St. Louis shouldn't be, I guess, confounded with some of the problems the city of St. Louis has. The city of St. Louis and East St. Louis are quite different places. As much as we've been attempting to highlight and been discussing problems in the city of St. Louis, they don't compare. They're qualitatively different from the condition of the city of East St. Louis, which has suffered absolutely massive depopulation economic loss.
And the inability to deliver city services for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, one always should be careful about these kinds of speculations, but over time, my sense is that East St. Louis, as a single coherent municipal entity, is probably going to disappear.
Well, it hasn't been a coherent entity in a while, but
well,
that's
just
a matter.
I mean that in a formal political sense.
Yeah, it seems to me that the school systems are all suffering from, you know, the ring road phenomena. The fact that there isn't a funding source in Illinois, it's exacerbated by the fact that we even have probably even worse property tax. Ratio, but it doesn't help the person that's in the lousy school in either place, I guess, but understanding it. But, you know, that's one of the reasons why people can't pull themselves up by their missing bootstraps, I guess, is because the educational system is deteriorating, has deteriorated so much. I just wanted to try to talk about something other than, you know, residential development and it just try, because it seems to me the alienation of having your school system taken over, of not being able to vote after being urged to vote.
Do you know what the totals are of people who voted in the last elections on school board candidates? Less than 10% of the registered voters.
Right.
Well, that's probably a common figure, actually. Maybe it's worse in the inner city, but it's a reflex of the alienation, I guess, I'm referring to. But at the time of the presidential elections, people were stacked up.
That was in 2000.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
Well, there were problems in 2004, too. I don't think anything was...
2004 was considerably less.
Yeah, well, considerably less is... But I'm just saying, why should anybody feel like they have any redress if that's the kind of thing that, I mean, that maybe is the least of it, too. Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Let's go on. We'll have another caller here, line number two in Urbana.
Good
Hello.
Morning.
Yes.
I have a two-pronged comment to make. One, and I don't have details, but my daughter who lives in St. Louis and conveys my granddaughter to her school says that there's going to be very expensive road construction on the way west.
Right.
And she's quite concerned about how she's going to be able to get from Glendale to the private school that my granddaughter goes to. And I'm just wondering what effect will this have on the people who use the roads, which is thousands, and the tourists who are trying to get from point A to point B. Do you know about...
Yeah, this is Highway 40 or US 64.
Yeah, that's what I take to get into Glendale. Yeah.
Right,
what
right. That's going to be under construction. They're going to close part of it for a while.
And how long is that going to be, and how are people going to get around?
We're trying to figure that out.
There are alternative routes, but they will become quite crowded quite quickly. This is something that has been highly controversial in the local area.
Well, I can imagine.
And, you know, there are people, and I would count myself among them, who are quite skeptical about the need for this massive reconstruction of 4064, and who really do worry about the dislocations occurring in the meantime. So, you have my and your daughter... My sympathy.
Yeah, and I'm with you on this, too, and I think that highway departments generally in states want to create more and more work for themselves to keep themselves going.
Well, my daughter tells me that there are some people whose kids go to this private school, and of course they drive them, are actually thinking of putting them in another school for that year.
Sometimes, you know, you can think ahead and forecast the worst, but I live right by the Forest Park Parkway
that was closed for two years,
and that was a difficulty. I had to think every time I went somewhere, of an alternate route to go, et cetera, but somehow you get by it.
Well, it's that it's a predictability of two trips, one to take the student and the other to pick up the student.
No, I realize that, and I'm going to be cut off from, places where I go to shop and see people, et cetera, too. So.
Yes, and you just think you'll just tough it out. And
What choice do I have?
Well, you don't, but the thing is, we know it will take longer than they say and cost more of a project than it
will
be.
Yes,
that's
always the case.
And the everyday citizen is going to have to just lump along. I mean, it just sounds absolutely desperate.
Well, our mayor particularly was opposed to closing the freeway entirely for a time in either direction, but it didn't prevail.
Well, I don't know about the politics of it. I'm only looking at it from her viewpoint. Now, my second thrust of my comment is I lived in St. Louis for 6 years, from 60 to 66. My daughter went to college there at Wash U and has lived there ever since. St. Louis, in my opinion, is one of the loveliest. Now, I'm talking about the greater St. Louis area.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the loveliest areas that one can live in. The educational, the religious, of course, shopping, the athletics, the cultural, the historic. That city has it all. And, of course, a huge area is going to have a problem with many different things. But for the life, a cultured life of many options, St. Louis is a fabulous.
You've come up with a new slogan for the local development, a cultured life with many options.
Well, I'll let them use that if they wish. Anyway, I love the area, never wanted to leave it, and I just look at it as a mecca for people who really want to have a fine lifestyle.
That's great.
All right, okay. We'll send that along to the Metropolitan Development Authorities there. we have a couple of minutes left, and something that we have touched on a little bit is economic development. And obviously, if you want to get people to move to your city, you're going to have to give them something to do. The older industrial Midwestern cities have certainly, a lot of them have had a lot of difficulties with jobs leaving. How has the city done and the area done in trying to create in job creation to give people something that they can do to earn a good living in?
I think it's done all right, but no better than that. St. Louis, like nearly every other city, has been in fits and starts attempting to create new jobs and job opportunities in the so-called information economy. We can compete reasonably well in that area. I would have us, though, not forget our manufacturing industrial tradition. Because manufacturing has declined in the United States over the last half century or more, doesn't mean it's gone. And with the baby boomers moving out of into retirement, out of the workforce, there will be lots and lots of job opportunities up and down the occupational ladder, including skilled blue-collar work. And that is an area in which St. Louis can compete, I think, very, very well.
Professor Stein, you'd want to add anything to that?
Well, I think we definitely need jobs. And when Rick mentioned manufacturing before, I wish we could do more in the city. There are places, certainly spaces, where factories, et cetera, could be located. And that would be a great boon to the inner city workforce.
Absolutely.
We're just about at the point where we're going to have to stop. I guess I'm interested in a way of coming back to something that we've talked about, and that is how it is you measure quality of life in a city, and whether in fact too often we stick to the kind of hard statistics that we've talked about and perhaps ignore as the, you know, referring to the title of this collection that you edited, Professor Rosenfeld, we don't often pay attention to the hidden assets.
Right. Well, I think, you ask a very good question. How do you measure such things? Mm-hmm. And I think you measure them indirectly. You measure them on the basis of visitors' responses, and often their first responses. And as I said earlier, one of the first thing visitors to the area say when they are being shown around the area is, where did you get all this marvelous red brick housing? One of the other things that's high on visitors' minds, especially when they're in the city of St. Louis, downtown and elsewhere, is, where did you get all this marvelous architecture? The cobblestone streets in Soulard and other neighborhoods. So that's, I think you measure these sort of elusive qualities by, at least in part, noting the responses of visitors to the areas. But then I think, you know, your previous caller should be an ambassador to St. Louis. I think your previous caller captures so much of what St. Louisans really do appreciate about this area, its livability. Now, how one measures that other than by noting the responses of visitors and former residents, I'm not really sure. But I know your caller's got her finger on an important part of what makes this area so special.
Well, you know, we're going to have to stop there because we're here at the end of the time. I just want to say thanks to both of our guests. Richard Rosenfeld, he's professor in the Department of Criminology, Criminal Justice, and Lana Stein, she is professor of political science, professor of public policy administration, both of them on the faculty of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. So, Professor Rosenfeld, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Professor Stein, thank you.
Thank you.